You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union for low-rate auto loan. Apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. Hey, Will, in the East Bay, what's going on?
Nice to speak to you guys again this evening.
Thanks for calling.
I was thinking of thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I was thinking of an old movie that we all love called Top Gun. And a scene later in the movie where he's looking at Maverick and he goes, "It seems you have a confidence problem."
Ha.
Okay. Let me elaborate on that.
No, I love it. I know every line from the movie. You're exactly
You're
right.
You're speaking to the right guy, Will.
You have a confidence problem. Yeah, go. Go, Will. Cook.
Thank you, gentlemen. Okay? You got a compromised line that's not performing. You got injuries. Okay? Last year, if you remember the way this guy played, that ball was out before the end of that cut by that receiver or McCaffrey out of the backfield. You don't see that so much now, okay? It's almost like he's in survival mode. And if you want to look at the pressure on this guy with the big bag looming over his head at the end of this season, okay, this young man's under a lot of pressure. Is he the right guy there? You bet he is. Do they have the right coach? You bet they do, okay? But there's a lot to overcome. And I'm not going to sit there and throw in the towel on this team yet. Because they've definitely got the talent and they got some elements back. And if people step up on this team, you know, and feel energized. And by the way, take that whole, you know, Super Bowl hangover and throw that out the window. My head will explode if I hear that on anybody's short.
Hey, Will, thank you so much for the call. I apologize for cutting you short, but we got breaking news.
95.7 The Game. Breaking news.
Breaking news, and it ain't good. DeAnthony Melton is out for the season. He will undergo ACL surgery, and this is, as Anthony Slater, who is reporting it, says, an absolutely massive blow to the Warriors' rotation and depth, the man that they used their entire mid-level exception on, and I thought was an unbelievable glue piece early on in this season. They knew it was an ACL injury, not necessarily a full tear, but you could tell yesterday, I thought dibs, when Steve Kerr was on with us and expressed a lot of concern and said getting second opinions and third opinions, and it's an ACL, and this is really tough. You could tell that something wasn't in the right place, and so today the news breaks. DeAnthony Melton, his time with the Warriors this year, unfortunately, very, very short.
And it might be his time with the Warriors, period,
entirely,
because he's in a one-year deal. He got the mid-level for 12 and change, and so it's terrible news. I just reached out to friend of the program, Dr. Nirav Pandya, to ask about
emergency.
Well, the surgery, is it, can you ever repair an ACL, or do you always take it out and put in something in its place? Because the initial word was, you know, it's a sprain, we don't know the extent, and now the new word is he's scheduled for surgery. Does that surgery automatically mean ACL reconstruction, or are there cases where you can kind of, you know, duct tape it together and the return to play is quicker?
That's a good question, and I know that, I look forward to the answer, but B, I really do want to stress to Warrior fans, do you already have an answer?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
The doc does not mess around.
I'm sure he was already listening to the show.
The question was, do they ever repair a torn ligament, or is it always replacement? Pretty much always replaced. The data on ACL repair shows it does very poorly. So probably 9 to 12 months, unless they do some sort of a hybrid procedure. Thank you, doc.
You're
the best.
So DeAnthony Melton could, in theory, potentially be ready for the start of next year, but at the same time, what team does he play for?
Correct.
No idea. Real bummer.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to stress to Warrior fans, I know they're off to a great start, and he's only been used sparingly during that start. Plus, you're used to watching Warrior basketball without him, because I think he's only played like 6 games in his Warrior career. But I want to stress to you how big of a deal this is. This basketball team looked a lot better when he was on the floor. And if you want to focus in on non-Steph minutes, this guy was key on both ends of the floor.
Yeah.
A phenomenal guard defensively. Somebody who would consistently knock down a 3. I really was looking forward to his full return because I thought this guy had a chance to actually be the glue. This is someone who is so versatile in the Warriors' backcourt. And so Look, they're still a very good basketball team without him. They've shown that already this year, but this is a huge deal, especially when you look at strength in numbers and all of those things we've been talking about with this particular team. So some of these other guys that are mixing in at the two, you know, and you're talking about whether Wiggins and obviously Pajemski, who has struggled out of the gates. They got to see more from those guys, and they're going to have to see him all year now with Melton gone.
Yeah, and it sucks for Melton, and my heart goes out to him as a fellow ACL injury survivor. It sucks, and you know, luckily he's young enough to where through the right rehab and the strength work, you come back and hopefully can still give it a go as an NBA player. But he's in his sixth year. He latched onto a good team, winning team, good culture, and he had become the starting guard. So you're making 12 and change on the mid-level. You do well here, and they go on a little mini run. You might get 3-55 the year after or something,
yeah,
because
I mean,
you show you're
totally
a winning player, a culture fit, and a two-way threat. And so now the poor guy, I mean, he goes to the doctor, and now it's going to be a long road back. I just feel for him in this moment.
Totally,
you know?
Totally. And I look at him, like, for Warrior fans who hadn't got a feel for who he was yet, he is almost GP2 on the defensive end, but on the offensive end, a much more consistent, versatile scorer and shooter than GP2, who's great with lobs and corner threes. But outside of that, this is somebody that could actually break you down on the dribble, penetrate, and make threes from out beyond the arc on the wing. I really liked what I saw from him.
Yeah, and 15 for 35 from three.
Really good.
Four games with two, and a game he went 5 for 8. So a shooter, a defender, a guy who understands the movement and all the rest of it. And so, you know, you think about this whole, can they play 12? Question mark. Well, now you don't have to worry about that as much.
That's true.
The rotation does.
That's true.
Become
and,
a little less awkward.
And don't forget, they don't beat Clay and the Mavericks without him.
Yep.
I know everyone wants to focus on that Curry flurry at the end, but what set up the Curry flurry was an absolute gotta have it three ball from D'Anthony Melton on the previous possession that I think cut it to four and set up the Curry flurry.
Yeah.
Probably go down as his best Warrior moment.
And it's maybe one of his best games. My new thing with plus minus is looking at the player versus the team. And in that game, he was a plus 12. The team was a plus 3, which tells me he was 9 points better in the plus minus. So he was a 9-point add, essentially, in plus minus for the team when he was out there.
Just an absolutely brutal blow. D'Anthony Melton out for the year. And we'll have ACL surgery for the Golden State Warriors. Okay, here's what I think we'll do. With the Melton news and the conversation we clearly want to have about Pods, Kuminga, and more, we'll have that Warrior conversation coming up here at about 5:30 or so. So those of you who want to weigh in, you're on hold, stay right there. We are coming to you, and we'll get you ready for Warrior basketball here in a little bit more than 20 minutes. But we also thought our conversation with NFL Films' Greg Cosell was incredibly important today with the stuff that he said about Shanahan in the red zone, about Christian McCaffrey returning, about Brock Purdy and how he's actually playing this year on film, and Trent Williams and his age. All of it really, really important. We wanted to let you hear that conversation. We started out by asking Greg about this particular stat. In the first 8 games of the year, Brock Purdy attempted 29 throws of 20 yards or more. That's 3.6 a game. Last 2 weeks, he's not even tried one. So, Greg, what are you seeing? Our defense is taking that away.
Yeah, I think in this game in particular, last week, he did not see the field very well. There were throws to be made that he left on the field that were downfield throws. And I can't tell you why that he's not seeing it, but he has not been as decisive. There were specific plays that I made note of as I watched the tape where the route concept was there, the read was clean, and for whatever reason, he just didn't process it the right way, and he ended up not throwing balls that he should throw. So he did not play very well this week, and the number you just gave this past week was predominantly on him. He just did not see it the way he needed to see it.
What sort of a pocket are you seeing him on film have? Because I'm watching Greg, and you know, I watch it 2 and 3 times, and I'm seeing a quarterback who doesn't have a lot of a comfort zone back there.
No, but a lot of that is also on him because, you know, he's also leaving clean pockets a little bit too often. See, one of the things, and we talked about this earlier in the season, and one of the things that really stood out about this last year was two things really stood out. Number one, his ability to throw with unbelievable timing and anticipation. And that's one reason there were more downfield throws. And number two, his ability to recognize coverage rotation instantaneously and know exactly where to go with the football. Those two things are not happening with the same level of decisiveness and consistency as they happened a year ago. Certainly not in recent weeks. He's had a stretch here probably for a month or so where he just, to me, watching tape, has not been particularly comfortable. He's leaving the pocket too early. He's not seeing it with the clarity that we expect him to based on what he had done in his past. So he just doesn't look like a comfortable player right now.
So this is interesting because there's actually a clip of Kyle Shanahan just today. And I get it. He's the guy's coach. But he says that there's no difference between the way Brock Purdy is performing last year versus this year. Would you agree with that based on what you're seeing on tape?
Well, first of all, I'd be truly, truly surprised if Kyle truly meant that. You know, he's giving a press conference,
right?
So he knows. Believe me, he knows. But first of all, he's doing the right thing. You don't throw your quarterback under the bus and say he's playing poorly. You don't say that. So that doesn't mean anything to me, and it shouldn't mean anything to you guys.
No, so I guess...
The tape tells you what you need to know.
And you would describe that as what?
Just what I said.
Like Brock Purdy is not playing anywhere near as well this year. Is that kind of what...
I mean, I'll give you an example. On their first third quarter possession, okay, he threw to McCaffrey for 6 yards on third and 15. It was just outside the red zone, so they ended up kicking a field goal. I don't know if you remember the specific play.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that was a great example of Purdy just not seeing the game with the same innate, refined, nuanced feel of timing and anticipation that we've come to expect. He had two throws there. He had a seam route to Samuel, and he had Jennings on the high-low with McCaffrey that he would have made last season without even thinking. So instead, he threw a check down to McCaffrey for 6 yards, and he threw it too quick. It was a clean pocket. He just got rid of it quick. And then they kick a field goal instead of perhaps getting a touchdown. There was another case, and see, some of these occur when there's completions, so you don't think of them as, oh, maybe he didn't see it the right way, because some of them are completions, but there were too many dropbacks in this game in which, to me, and I've been watching the Niners, you know, for years and years and years, as you guys know, in which I do not believe, and again, you know, I'm not talking to Kyle, obviously, but where I believe he just did not process the route concept versus the coverage in the way that he needed to and with the necessary clarity.
And I'm actually fascinated by the play before the one you referenced, second and 19, where Purdy scrambles for four and he had McCaffrey open. So to me, that's another incident of him being a little tentative. And I wanted to ask you about the throw second and 11 that Debo was open on play action. And if they convert that, they probably move the chains and keep the ball. What did you see from the film as far as Brock and that throw?
You're talking about the one late in the game?
Right. The one he airmailed Debo by about 4 yards.
There's nothing to say there other than he threw it inaccurately. I mean, that was the play. If he put it between the numbers, it's a completion. He just airmailed it. I mean, that one is not a function of not seeing it. Or that was the play, and he threw it to the right guy, and he just airmailed it. I mean, I can't, you know, those things happen. You don't want it to happen there, but it happened. That was just a bad throw.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us every single week on Willard and Tibbs, 95.7 The Game. Greg, let's talk Debo Samuel for a bit. The fan base has really been frustrated on the plays that they've come accustomed to see really work, and this year they're not as much. Do you see that as a schematic thing? Has Debo maybe lost a step? What do you see with his game?
Well, I think when your quarterback's not playing at the same level, your receivers end up not getting the same number of targets. And because when fans watch a game, they can't see the route, so they automatically assume, because he's not getting the ball, that the receivers are not playing as well. And that's not really the case. Most of the time when a passing game is not working, it's more on the quarterback. But I will say that Seattle played, I would guess, I don't know this for a fact, I would guess they played more man coverage than the 49ers might have anticipated going into the game based on what they'd seen on tape from the Seahawks prior. And I thought at times all the receivers struggled to separate and create, you know, cleaner throws. But when it's man, you still have to deliver the football. You know, it's just the way it is, because otherwise you're not going to make any throws. But I don't think that that Deebo Samuel's a problem. I think that the pass game as a whole, which starts with Purdy, has been a little bit of an issue.
What are you seeing from the jet sweeps? Not only this game where Deebo had two, one of them called back because of a penalty. I'm seeing ineffectiveness now. Is that because of just the overall execution of the play, or have defenses caught on to some of the stuff that Kyle likes to do?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because, you know, when I watch these plays and I see guys get beat on blocks, I don't think that that means that the defense has caught on. I think it means that guys don't make their blocks. I don't think the O-line played particularly well in this game. I thought there were a number of poor snaps by the center, by the left guard Banks. Again, I'm just watching the tape, so that's all I can tell you. You know, I'm just wondering if Father Time has caught up to Trent Williams a little bit. I don't know if he's playing at the same consistent elite level that has defined his career. And he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, as he should be. But I spoke with someone else, you know, from the league who watches a ton of tape and kind of agreed that it just might be the beginning of Father Time catching up with him.
Okay, that's interesting. I think we'd love to hear more about that. Like, what?
Well, there's nothing more to say.
But what do you see?
Yeah.
Specifically, what do you see? That sort of has you thinking that?
Well, I think in pass pro, he's not been quite as powerful with his anchor. There are a couple times he just gets not beat, you know, not where you go, oh my God, he's just getting beat, but where he's just getting pushed back a little bit too much into the pocket, which never, you know, would happen. I think even in the run game, there's been a couple of times where, you know, he just didn't quite make the block with, you know, kind of the definition that we've come to expect. Just little things. Like I said, it's not like you watch him and go, oh my God, this guy can't play. It's just, you know, little things that start to show. And, you know, is he 35? Is that how old he is?
I think he's even older.
Yeah, might be 36.
Older,
yeah.
Older than that. Yeah. Yeah, here, I'll
I mean, you know, eventually it happens. I mean, you know, and again, I'm not going to sit here and say that it has happened. I'm just wondering, you know, this is not a definitive statement. I'm not saying it as a mathematical equation. I just notice on tape that, you know, you used to watch the Niners. It's this way with the Eagles, with Lane Johnson. Like with Lane Johnson, when you watch the Eagles and he's their right tackle, you watch tape and it's just like, you know, you never even notice Lane Johnson. That was the way it was with Trent Williams. It was like, oh my God, whoever he's blocking is just irrelevant. It's just, that's the way it is. But now it's just a little bit here and there.
Trent turned 36 in July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the ways that shows up, Greg, is when he lines up in an illegal formation, maybe because he knows he's a step slow and he's starting to maybe cheat on it. I won't ask you to comment on that because you can't judge his mindset, of course, but I just was fascinated by that penalty from a veteran who knows how to line up. I want to ask you about the touchdown to Juwan Jennings. They go play action, and I want to say it was... You go ahead, Greg.
I was just going to say, I did think it was interesting that with Kittle out, that they played 12 snaps with six O-linemen, and they played Jalen Moore. That, to be honest, I didn't expect that. So, when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Greg, I'm wondering this. The data suggests that the Niners are still moving the ball pretty well until they get to the 20-yard line, and then things are really jamming up when it comes to the red zone. And they were so good at it last year. What are you seeing with the Niners inside the 20?
Yeah, well, that's where we hope that McCaffrey becomes a factor, because obviously that's where he was a big factor a year ago, and that changes the way defenses play. So that's what we're hoping, you know, as he continues to get his kind of feet wet and, you know, gains, you know, a little more just for the feel of the games. Because I don't think he looks badly. I just think it's a matter of, you know, getting acclimated to playing, you know, an NFL game. So that's what the hope is, because, you know, teams – that can run the ball, particularly in the low red zone, you know, that really helps. That's how you score touchdowns, because the passing game is hard. The passing game becomes schematic. Like the touchdown at Jennings, which you mentioned,
right.
That's a schematic play, and it worked really, really well. But you have to run a lot of schematic stuff because there's just not a lot of space.
And it's part of that scheme in that moment, having Christian McCaffrey out there, so the play action becomes much more of a viable threat.
Well, it can. I mean, you know, but you know, it depends on what your play call is. Like on that Jennings touchdown, Jennings was in a wing alignment, and he showed blocking. And they were playing man-to-man, Seattle, and Love, who, by the way, had a really good game. They played a ton of what we call big nickel with three safeties. I almost felt like in this game, Mike McDonald deployed Love in the way he deployed Kyle Hamilton with the Ravens. They're not exactly the same player, obviously, but I thought that there was an element of that to the way in which he deployed Love playing with their three safety personnel. But so Jennings blocked. So Love put his eyes in the backfield thinking it was a run play. And then, you know, Purdy did the play action boot left, and Jennings just leaked out, and Love was stuck inside. So that's a schemed play from 3 yards out. You know, who knows, maybe because it's second and goal, you know, a year ago they probably hand that off to McCaffrey.
Greg Cosell with us, Willard and Dibbs, NFL Films. Greg, if you noticed, and this is kind of like reflective of the fan base, I think, right now, we've had this entire conversation solely about the Niners offense. Let's go to the defensive side of the football, and this probably won't surprise you. I know that, you know, we've talked about Nick Bosa a lot, but when he left the game, the number suddenly got way, way better for Seattle, and there is the thought that he might miss this coming game. So what are your thoughts on the 49ers on film and how that pass rush looks without Nick Bosa?
Well, I think I've told you guys over our conversations that it's not so much the number of sacks, it's how offenses treat guys who are big-time pass rushers. And it was evident that the Seahawks were not going to let Bosa wreck their pass game with one-on-one matchups versus either right tackle, Lucas or Gerald, whoever was playing, because they deployed multiple concepts to limit his edge rush throughout the game. That was clearly their game plan. So when he went out, things changed dramatically. You know, again, I'm not making a judgment here. People can if they want. This team does not blitz. They only had 1 5-man pressure in the entire game, okay? And that came late on the final touchdown drive by the Seahawks. Every other pass rush was a 4-man pressure. And that's the way they've essentially been all year. They have the lowest blitz rate of any team in the league. So that's the way they've chosen to play. Now, one can sit here and debate, you know, oh, well, they need to do a little more blitzing. You know, you can debate that. And maybe they'll do that, particularly if Bosa is out. But we'll see. But that's the way they have played pretty much all season. And when he went out, clearly things changed.
When you look at the secondary and their performance, I was trying to watch the tape and just see if there was ever a snap where they were coming up and playing press. What do you see from these corners, Greg? Because I see a team that likes to play 6 or 7 yards off almost all the time.
Yeah, that's kind of the way they play. They're not a heavy press man team. I don't know. Again, that could change too, because as we've discussed, Renardo Green, when he's the rookie who plays now at left corner. It'll be interesting when Ward comes back what they do. But anyway, the point is that Green in 2 years at Florida State was a heavy press man corner because that's the way Florida State played. They were a heavy press man defense. So that's Green's background and his experience. So they play that every once in a while, but that's not really foundationally how they play with their corners.
What would you say is the challenge with that group going against Jordan Love? Incredibly talented, in and out of the lineup with injuries this year. Has a lot of turnovers, a lot of interceptions in just 8 games. Like, what have you seen from him on film this year that will challenge the Niner defense?
Well, they're pretty complete offense because they run the ball really well. Josh Jacobs is a really good back. He's got a physical presence to him. He's got short area burst. He's just a really good back, and the run game is pretty much their starting point. Love is incredibly gifted. He's probably, in terms of pure physical gifts, top five in the league. But he can be a little reckless. He can be a little undisciplined, but he's very aggressive. That's his mindset, and that's the way it plays out. So he's going to turn it loose. So you have to be aware of that. He's not a check down guy. And when I say that, I don't mean he never checks it down, but I mean he's going to turn it loose. You know, he's not risk averse. Let's put it that way. So, you know, he will push the ball down the field and they will call plays to do that. He's got a big arm. Like I said, he's really gifted and he's big. He's 6'4", 220. So you're dealing with a very, very physically and athletically gifted player who's very aggressive in the way he sees the game.
How do they go about inflicting damage in the pass game from what you've seen on film? They have a lot of different weapons. Do they play mostly 11 personnel with the three wide receivers? How do they go about it, Greg?
They'll play a good amount of 12, but Jaden Reed is the most interesting guy because they are a heavy motion team in many ways like the Niners, and Jaden Reed is their predominant motion player. So they do a lot of things with multiple motions with him. And by the way, when you go in motion, it's not just the pass game. A lot of times when you go in motion with someone crossing the formation, maybe returning, is you're trying to move second-level defenders, and what that does is it impacts run support. So you have to have a plan for all that going in. Are you going to react to it? Are you just going to let it happen? You know, you have to have a plan. That's part of an overall structure of a defense. But the point I'm making is it's not just in the pass game in which they deploy motion with Reed. And Reed will end up lining up all over. So you have to be aware of where he is. He will be offset in the backfield a number of times in the game.
Greg, I want to go back to your comment about the Niners in the red zone and hoping that Christian McCaffrey's presence will now get that going. There's something interesting that we found. Maybe you'll debunk this as just coincidental, but the Dolphins with McDaniel, the Rams with McVay, the Niners with Shanahan, and the Packers with LaFleur, all disciples, right, running similar systems. They're all in the bottom third in the league in red zone efficiency right now. Is that, in your mind, coincidental, or is there something that the league is really, like, you know, like catching up to?
I would say that you'd have to look at a much larger sample size because all those guys have been coaching for a long time. So, you know, that's a hard question to answer because you'd have to go back and look. You know, McVay's been a head coach for a long time. LaFleur's been a head coach in Green Bay for a long time. If this is the first time it's happening, you know, I can't give you an answer, but if it's the first time it's happening, my sense would be that it's probably more coincidental, but I don't know that. So, but you'd have to do a much larger sample size than this year.
Got it.
Yeah, perhaps it's personnel-based, too, when you don't
it
have McCaffrey for a long time, then you miss Kittle, you're going to probably be a little worse in the red zone.
Yeah, and you know, and don't forget, the Rams were without Kupp and Nacua
for
most of the season. Yeah, I mean, I can just see over these last number of years when Kupp was healthy how many times he caught red zone touchdowns within 10 yards.
And the Dolphins have been without their quarterback a lot, and the Packers without their quarterback
the
a lot.
In a sense, you've answered your own question.
Well, thank you for helping us do that, Greg. Hey, as always, great stuff. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, I love talking with you guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
okay.
Greg.
Hey, Greg Cosell, NFL Films. All right, there he is. We'll do it again next week. He loves talking to us. I thought today, that hit the hardest, I would say, of any Greg Cosell conversation we've had yet. I mean, you have to listen to what he's saying. I think you don't have to agree with him.
Of course. But some don't.
Yeah, but the fun thing about Greg is if you said that to Greg, I don't agree with you, he would say, I'm not sharing an opinion.
Exactly.
And
he would say it that matter of fact.
Yes,
I'm just sharing what I see on the tape.
Right.
What I see on the tape is clear to me, and he wouldn't even go on to brag about how much he knows about it. He'd just simply say, you know, this is what I do. I don't look at spreadsheets. And you tried to DVOA him, and he said, I don't do stats. I do the tape.
I wonder if he even knows what DVOA stands for.
Right. I know he knows what VHS is.
Because
he's about the tape.
That's very good.
Come on, Lucas, wake up in there.
No, Lucas doesn't.
Appreciate it.
Actually,
I thought you were just calling him old.
Yeah, I did too at first. But anyway, Want to do this real quick before we go back to the Warrior phone calls. And if you're just joining us, D'Anthony Melton is out for the year. It's terrible news. He needs ACL surgery. Doc Pandya does a great breakdown on Twitter if you want to read it about why something that is not a torn ACL still needs ACL surgery. And so Melton is going to be out for the year. It's a huge, huge blow to what the Warriors are trying to do. But a fun game, if you would, Director of Sports Lucas Alexander, if you know where the game show music is, it would be helpful right now because forget DVOA. You know EPA, not East Palo Alto. EPA.
Right.
Defensive and offensive EPA.
Expected points added by
there
a play.
You go. So when you do the grid of defense and offense, the teams that end up in the high right quadrant are the teams that are in effect doing both things well, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There are 8 football teams that are in the high right quadrant for offensive and defensive EPA. Dan Dibley, can you name those 8 teams?
Yeah.
I give you 2 strikes.
2 strikes. All right. So it's already an 0-1 count. Feel like it was a time clock violation on me. I wasn't in the box, but I'll take it and try to keep things moving.
Yep.
I'm going to go with the good teams first and say Detroit's in there. Okay.
Detroit at 9-1, yes.
Kansas City's tricky because their offense doesn't seem to be what we think it should be, but I'm going to say Kansas City.
Kansas City, they are barely above the line.
In offense. Their defense is good.
No, so right. Actually, you know what's odd? They're barely above the line on the defensive side.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. But anyway, so, the Chiefs are in.
Okay, beautiful. The Niners have to be, hence the bit. I'm going to say the Niners. Oh, it's big.
Oh, Lucas was giving me the no. He's shaking that off like I was like Duvall asking to throw a slider.
Yeah.
He's like, no!
You guys don't have pitch com over there?
No. Yes, the Niners are in. All right, who else?
I'm starting to cook. How about Baltimore? They're a good team. Good offense, good defense. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. That is incorrect. Lucas jumped the shark.
The second buzz is for you, Lucas.
The Baltimore Ravens, who are not good on defense, if you're watching.
Yeah.
They are 7-4 and below the line on defense.
How far below? Is it close at all?
Well,
proportionally.
I mean,
is their logo touching the line?
No.
Okay, then they're not that close. Because sometimes you can be mostly below, but on the line.
Like the Rams are ahead of the Ravens on the defensive line. Anyway, go ahead. So there's your one strike. You do not, if you get another, you lose.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Minnesota is a good team. I'm going to go Minnesota.
Minnesota is in.
You know Sneaky, who's probably barely above on both? The Chargers.
Okay, now, they are actually way above on defense.
Okay.
They're barely above on offense.
Gotcha.
But the Chargers are a correct answer. Ladies and gentlemen,
there are
3 more teams.
3 more?
3 more. You must get them all or you're a big, fat loser.
Oh, boy.
Okay, yes, again, this is the 8 teams that are above the line on both offensive and defensive EPA. Expected points added. So it means they're in the top right quadrant on both offense and defense. Dibs has already correctly named the Vikings, the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Niners, and the Lions. His incorrect guess, the Ravens. Dan?
I'm going to go with the team you hate and put this right in your face. The Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah.
Bang!
You want to overrate them?
Well, I still think Sirianni's a clown. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, like a clown? Like I'm funny like a clown?
2 more.
I'm going to go with the Fighting D'Amicos. D'Amico Ryan's in the Houston Texans.
Okay, the Houston.
Feel good about this one.
You do? You do?
I feel great. No! No! No!
I don't have the list.
One of these, it's absurd that you left them out. It's absolutely absurd that you left
the
them
Bills?
Out. Thank you.
Buffalo?
Where were you on that one, pal?
It's not that easy. Chief,
a lot of pressure.
You're over there with the answers.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, should have said Buffalo.
The beauty of it is the 2 you missed are the next 2 opponents for the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Green Bay and Buffalo.
Green Bay and Buffalo. Yeah, the surprising ones that are not in that quadrant or the winning records, the Ravens, the Commanders, the Texans, the Steelers, and the Arizona Cardinals. They are not in, but The other thing to point out, the 49ers, the only team in the quadrant that doesn't already have 7 wins.
Yeah.
And in fact, they don't even have 6.
No, they don't. And of all the teams you mentioned, I can't help but think about Pittsburgh as the team that maybe is still being doubted the most. Arizona second on that list. And then maybe Denver. Like, I think I'm quicker to believe in the Chargers than I am in Denver now.
Denver is a very, very interesting one, and they are well.
Bo Nix is getting Bo Beta.
Well above on defense, nowhere near close enough on offense right now.
Right, but he's gotten better.
And the Steelers are really close, way above on defense, and just a hair off on the offensive side. So,
Russ has unlocked some things there. Justin Fields was good, and then Russ has been even a little bit better.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, so let's get to some Warrior calls, and then we're going to have some fun at 5:45. Not only getting you ready for the Warrior game, but you clued me into this. Do y'all know what today is? This is a big time anniversary. Director of sports, Lucas Alexander, some director. You don't even know what today is. You don't know what the anniversary of today is.
Well, do you know about Tony? And it's our anniversary. It's a song.
He definitely doesn't know that.
What could he
know? But it's okay, because this did happen before you were alive. This did happen before.
Way before.
Yeah. I was 7. I was 7 years old when this happened.
I already had a smoking habit, I'll tell you what.
So did I.
That's funny.
42 years ago today was the play. The play. The band is out on the field. And the great call and the great moment between Cal and Stanford. So to that end, we're going to take Niels and Katati.
Yep.
And then we're going to throw something out there. Get ready to call us at 888-957-9570. And just what is, in your mind or memory bank, you didn't have to be there necessarily, but what's the craziest thing that you ever seen in sports?
Yeah.
Just the craziest freaking thing you ever seen. We got some answers that we'll throw in there, but let's go to Niels and Katati on Brandon Pajemski. Hey, Niels, what's up?
Yo, thanks for the opportunity to share.
Yeah, man.
Love your show.
Thank you.
Appreciate your humor and heart. Okay, so real quick, a side thing, the only time you'll ever hear me cheer for Boston as a lifelong Warriors fan was that they beat the Cavs and ended their win streak there. Just the Warriors fan and me wanting to defend that and stop them from creeping up on our 2015-16 record of 24 consecutive wins. I did want to sound off on FUD.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, what's that?
I said, feel you. I get it. Yeah, the Cavs have lost. That's good. Keep that portion of the record in check.
Yeah, so, the Warriors fan is not wanting to cheer for Boston, because I'm also of the Warrior fans that are that really value our win, the finals win against the Boston, as the most satisfying. Okay, so on pods. I'm an assistant coach for a teenage basketball team. The kids are always asking, who's your favorite Warrior? And the real question should be, who's your favorite Warrior other than Steph? Because that's
right.
That goes without saying. I like to hear what people's favorite second favorite Warrior is. And I often answer the question with GP2 and pods. And, I love Draymond, also a legend, obviously. But yeah, I go to those two, and the kids ask why, and sometimes who. I tell them the reason is that these are the guys who are out there. I mean, really, the whole team. It's the strength in numbers. It's the Warrior spirit. But they make good on the values that Steve Kerr talks about of playing with joy and humor and compassion. But they're also out there working hard to make a difference, playing with fire and grit and hustling on defense, forcing turnovers, taking charges my man BP leading the league last year. And so he's in a shooting slump, Pajemski. All right. And I just heart goes out to Melton. Obviously, we're going to miss him. But yeah, Pods, he's in a shooting slump. And, I just keep shooting it. You always say, shoot your shot. It's all you got. I think he's a young man with a great deal of potential, and he's going to do well. So I want to see him out on the floor. I want to see him developing and busting through this. I loved when he said on TV a week ago, been shooting like poop. That's a Pods quote.
Yeah.
But I would just tell him to shoot his shot, shoot his way out of this. And, I want to appreciate that young man for showing that Warrior spirit and getting out there and fighting. Even in the slump right now, last game he was out there forcing turnovers and fighting for the ball. And, keep that energy going. You got a spot on the team for me.
Yeah, Niels, it's a really good call. I just think, and it's not surprising that you're a coach, because Pods is kind of a coach's dream, because he is that type of guy that can be struggling with his shot. And you've pointed this out a number of times. He's still constantly able to do something that helps the team. he's going to be productive on some level, even when he's not shooting. I also don't worry about his confidence. He's an incredibly confident guy. But, yeah, man, he's got to find it. He's got to find it. You got two players that were the centerpieces of all the offseason conversation in Jonathan Kuminga and Brandon Pajemski. And for different reasons, I'd argue that for both of them, is the question, hey, do they pop off the screen when they play so far this year? No.
Right.
No, they don't. They don't. I would love to see them. I liked your word, underwhelming. I'd love to see more from both of them.
Yes, and Pods is popping off the screen for the wrong thing, which is, when he shoots the three, 19.1%, and I think it looks very stiff and stilted. He doesn't have a natural, beautiful stroke anyway, but looks like he's kind of just jabbing it at the rim right now. It's a mix between a shot put and a javelin throw. It's just kind of a hurl.
Yeah.
It doesn't invoke great confidence right now, and I think you can see that he gets even like a 15-footer off a screen, and he thinks about it, and then he makes the smart pass instead of just like, I'm going to go ahead and light it up.
I wonder if he's a name that people will bring up. Maybe not. But now that D'Anthony Melton is out for the year, is there somebody who can grab that two-guard starting spot and keep it? And who is that person? We can get to that. But also, in honor of the play, and we should grab the call of it just to inspire everybody if you want. It's pretty great. I don't mean to make work for you there, Lucas. But anyway, in honor of that, on our way out the door, 888-957-9570. What's the craziest thing you ever seen in sports? What pops to mind when you hear that question? Safe holiday travel starts at Valvoline Instant Oil Change, your 15-minute drive-through oil change. Expert technicians check fluids, tire pressure, wipers, lights, batteries, and more. For locations and coupons, visit BayAreaOilChange.com, BayAreaOilChange.com. What is the craziest thing you've ever seen in sports? We'll take your calls at 888-957-9570 next on Willard and Dibbs.
Harmon will probably try to squib it, and he does. Ball comes loose, and the Bears have to get out of bounds. Along the sideline, another one. They're still in deep trouble at midfield. They tried to duel a couple of. The ball is still loose, but they get it to Rogers. They give it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone. He's going to go into the end zone. The Bears have won. The Bears have won. Oh my God! The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending, exciting, thrilling finish in the history of college football.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
And I hate to say this out loud, thank God that happened before replay.
Yeah.
Thank God it happened before replay.
There was a couple, two, three.
As if it happened
before replay. We might have had a knee down. We might have had one drifting forward toss.
I think going to get overturned now.
It just, I mean, there's going to be some 10-second runoff. Or, I mean, what are we even doing anymore?
What are we doing?
The purity of no replay in that moment. And, you know, for the refs watching it, you got to make a call, and that play was so out of the ordinary that, you know, you let it go, and you let it go.
Yeah.
And nowadays, we still see NFL teams trying to duplicate that when, you know, you get a kickoff, and you're down three. And
what else you got at that point?
Nothing else.
What else you got?
42 years ago today.
Was it the trumpet player or the trombone player?
Trombone.
That got absolutely hammered, and I think hospitalized, like got hurt, like hurt.
Yeah, is it okay to joke around about it 42 years later?
I think so.
Yeah. His trombone was not the only thing that got hurt. Your boy got planted.
He did.
And somewhere that man, hopefully still with us, is a 65-year-old that has that memory.
Oh, well, I mean, for crying out loud, you want to really feel old. Will in the East Bay called in a little while ago, and he quoted something from the movie Top Gun. And unfortunately, the D'Anthony Melton thing broke. Right, but I was going to get playful with him, and I was going to say, hey, I'll offer you like a Willard and Dibbs t-shirt if something even existed like that. If you can name the actor who used that line. And the actor is Tom Skerritt, who played Viper in Top Gun.
Oh, yeah.
And then Dibbs off the air, I was like, how old do you think Tom Skerritt is right now? And Tom is still with us.
Yeah, yeah.
And you guessed?
80.
He's 91 years old.
He can't be. Viper can't be 91.
Viper is 90.
Who's out there defending our airspace? If Viper's 91.
I think it's that young skipper, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, my goodness.
You want me on that wall. Anyway, all right, glad you're with us. We got a Dubs game coming up. Warriors Live is right around the corner. Grandy is getting ready. He's over at Chase Center. And in the wake of the news about D'Anthony Melton, he'll be all over that and get you ready for Dubs and Hawks tonight on 95.7 The Game. In honor of 42 years to the day since the play, we're asking people, what is the craziest thing you ever seen in sports? Rudy in Pittsburgh. Hi, Rudy. What's on your mind?
I've got two, but one's got an asterisk. I think the obvious answer is the Malice in the Palace.
That was my answer.
A professional athlete. Yep. Yeah, watching a professional athlete go into the stands and catch some fans with a couple of fists, and then watching fans get onto the court. I don't know what was going through that guy's head, but he caught two, I believe, as well. But my extra one with the asterisk is watching Mankind getting thrown off Hell in the Cell by Undertaker. I know most people aren't going to consider that a sport, but I still watch that today and am in shock watching him go through a table and then through the cell and getting a tooth knocked out by a chair. So that's my asterisk as well.
Okay, Rudy, yeah. Thank you very much. I don't know if that was that part of the script or not.
Well, I
guess
it's
outside the script.
I do think, and I'm not a big wrestling aficionado, but the athleticism that these individuals, men and women, have, it's, I don't know if it's sports, but it's athletics.
It's impressive.
It's impressive. It's brave. It's crazy. And if you're throwing Mankind off a cage, that sounds to me like you're throwing a grown man off like an 8-foot structure.
Oh, Mankind.
And he's okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, I don't know why my mind just went here when he brought up Malice at the Palace, which was the first thing that came to my mind.
Right.
Craziest thing you ever seen in sports. Was it Jamal Tinsley that came running out with a mop from the custodian's closet? Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, go look at the highlights. I think it was Jamal Tinsley. He came running out with some sort of cleaning tool. Like, everything just went haywire. It wasn't just Ron Artest and, you know, you had Steven Jackson. You had all those guys. And obviously some people were up in the stands, but I think it was Jamal Tinsley came running across the court with, like, a mop. Like, what?
I mean, yeah.
What in the hell is happening here?
My favorite part of that whole thing is when the one fan runs, he's on the court, the guy who looks like one of E's buddies in Entourage,
yeah.
The fat guy, and Jerry Ferrara, who's no longer that heavy, he runs at Jermaine and realizes what he's done, tries to stop, and skids forward, and Jermaine just goes, zap, hits him with that one piece, 6'11", athlete, sees this moving, chubby target coming, and it's just a one piece.
What a massive, if you would ask me, in your whole life, would a massive fight ever break out between the players and the fans? You know, I'm thinking no. I'm thinking no. Tom in Walnut Creek. Hi, Tom. What you doing, Tom?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. Just driving in the rain. I think the one thing that popped in my head when you guys mentioned this was Randy Johnson blowing up a bird with one of his fastballs. That was nuts.
It was nuts. And Randy was so, like, I love him for this. He was so traumatized by it.
Yeah.
Like, he did not think it was funny. He's like the bird. I mean, he was really broken up about the bird. Thank you, Tom.
Barry Zito actually had the same thing happen, but the bird caught the pitch. Yeah, it kind of walked in that way.
Would have been better with a Rick Russell joke, actually. But
little dated,
anyway,
trying to keep it fresh.
Fair, that's fair.
I had an Evel Knievel moment I was going to share, but I realized it's from 1974. This man used to use a motorcycle to try to jump over canyons.
Well, I mean.
And we all watched.
Yeah.
You think we didn't watch that sham on Friday night? This was equally...
Well, this wasn't, like, staged, though.
No. Yeah.
I mean, it was staged, but somebody was actually risking their life.
Have you seen some of the video that's circulating?
Oh, yes.
Like, Jake Paul's arm is down, and Mike just, like, pulls
Mike could have absolutely taken his face off, and he starts to punch and just goes, stops. I'm like, oh, my God, what are we all
like
a part
of? Like the old two for flinching, right? Remember when you were a kid? Two for flinching. You fake on someone.
I had not a Malice at the Palace, but we had a light version of it at San Mateo High School. We used to play in a gym called The Pit. And so there were walls.
Yeah.
I mean, there were about 8 foot high walls that surrounded the court. And I don't even know who the hell came up with this. What a great idea. These walls were literally, I mean, you had about 2 feet of sideline to play basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And then walls.
Marine Catholic was like that. It was called the Pit.
Yeah, we called it the Pit also. They've sort of changed it now. But anyway, all four walls, no sideline space. I can't tell you how many stuff I saw, how many things I saw in practice where dudes were breaking their forehead open and all kinds of stuff sliding around diving for balls. But anyway, he might be out there listening. I hope he is. I know he's still bouncing around the Bay Area. Sam Fanua.
Oh.
Sam Fanua.
You do not mess with Sam Fanua.
You don't.
On principle.
He was our center.
Samoan or Tongan?
You know what? One of his family members is literally in the other room. He can tell. I think Samoan.
Okay.
I think Samoan.
Either way, if you have more vowels than consonants in your name, I'm staying away.
Sam was a gem. Is a gem. Like, just the sweetest human being. But, yeah. Don't mess with Sam. That's our guy. That's our big guy in the middle. And I didn't even know, mainly because I was just warming the bench, but fans from the other team, the other school, they were giving it to him. There was something, and somebody said something about your mom.
No.
Somebody
not Mama Fanua.
Said something about your mama.
Oh, it's on.
And I'm telling you, we won a game to clinch like an undefeated season or something. Like we clinched at the end of the year. And we all run out onto the court to do the celebration thing. It lasts about 8 seconds because somebody looks left. Fanua is climbing the wall, scales the wall, goes into the stands, and he finds dude, and he is whop, whop, whop. I mean, giving it to him. Absolutely giving it to him.
We got hands being thrown. Or just two hands.
Yes. It wasn't the malice at the palace. It was the pummeling at the pit. And it went
down. Oh, my God.
Down. Oh, my God. Yeah. So anyway.
We had the same thing in Marine Catholic.
You did?
There was a drummer from Terra Linda who was annoying our big guy. I won't name him because he's a reputable member of society. He went on to play football at San Jose State.
Okay.
Rather large.
I would imagine.
Super muscular. And this drummer wouldn't stop. And finally, my guy stands up and went, sap, sap, sap.
Sap.
A quick three-piece. And this poor drummer, he was no longer the little drummer boy. He got knocked out.
Rick in the city. Rick, what's on your mind? Rick?
Rick.
He gone. Brendan in Alameda. Hi, Brendan.
Dibs. Wanted to share the special moment that you can see on YouTube of a guy whose actual name is Kenny Powers. He bolted a couple of flimsy wings and a jet engine onto like a 1978 Lincoln Town Car and put it up on down a hill and up a ramp and tried to fly it over the St. Lawrence River. And it's kind of tips up and the wings come off and then the whole thing goes down and they're all running in. It broke his back. It's on YouTube. It's special internet moment.
Special moment.
The St. Lawrence River jump of Kenny Powers.
There it is. Brendan, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is going to be family viewing tonight.
I was going to say, I've never seen that before, but I probably will now.
Live from Morrisburg, Canada. He's in a vehicle traveling very fast. Wow, that's a big ramp. And then, the chute goes, the car explodes, and spoiler alert, I don't like his chances.
Does that count as sports?
Oh, my God. He hit the water hard. You call that a parachute?
Oh,
yes,
God.
It's sports.
Okay,
sports, man.
Fine, whatever. We got more sports coming up later right here on 95.7 The Game. In the name of Warriors and Hawks, and Warriors Live with Grandy is next, and is brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Do you want to do it again tomorrow?
Yeah, it's week 12, brother.
In the National Football League. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, and even for Carter over there. I see you, Carter. How can you not? You guys are a large, large man. I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. That's all you got.
Tune into 95.7 The Game for Warriors Live. 60 minutes before tip-off every Warriors game throughout the season as we get you ready for the action. Presented by Xfinity. Stream sports from the best seat in the house with Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff.
You hear that? That's the sound of another year counting down. Another year missing your revenue goal. Another year wondering why your marketing isn't more effective. Another year worried about next year. The clock is ticking, but you still have time. Time to contact the experts at Scale Marketing. Scale Marketing is a full-service marketing agency who is expert in lead generation and revenue growth. Our clients see an average of 20% growth in the first year alone, with sustained growth from there. From your traditional marketing to social media to paid search, we'll take a forensic approach, digging deep to find the root problems in your marketing strategy. Then we'll fix them fast. At Scale Marketing, we can't stop the clock, but we can change your company's future. Find out how you can make your marketing budget work harder and drive more revenue. Contact us at scalemarketing.com or call us at 833-SCALE-25. That's 833-SCALE-25.
This is Larry Flick, owner of The Floor Store. The holidays are coming, but so is our pre-holiday sale. Starting November 8th, everything will be 30% off. Not just a few selected items, 30% off everything in the store. Go to floorstores.com for directions. The Floor Store, your Bay Area flooring authority.
Check, check, and check. That's the sound of me getting a jump start on my holiday list. But I can't take all the credit. Kohl's makes it too easy. I got my daughter a mini instant camera, my husband his favorite cologne, my sister Koolaburra by UGG slippers, and that's just the beginning. Then I got 20% off some of my other gifts. Yep, it doesn't get better than Kohl's. Select styles. Offer valid to November 23rd. Coupons do not apply to Tech, Sephora at Kohl's, and Koolaburra by UGG. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
If you have unfiled taxes or are in debt to the IRS, this is important news. The IRS just rolled out a new program to help struggling taxpayers more easily resolve their tax problems. It's called the Taxpayer Relief Initiative, and it opens up powerful new options for people looking to get back on the right track with the IRS. And no one knows this program like the professionals at Optima Tax Relief, America's most trusted tax resolution company. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax.